It's going to be a wild ride. So buckle yourselves in.
Hello and welcome to a special bonus episode of the Stromash podcast in Edinburgh, Scotland. We don't do things by halves here. We don't seek out the advice of somebody who's maybe watched two games of the NFL before and decided to launch their own channel and give us their draft expertise. No, we find a man who's played in the NFL. Well, we've done it slightly wrong because he didn't get himself drafted. So how does that work? It's Hollis Thomas. Hollis, how are you doing, sir?
How you doing, Ian? How things been going with you?
Yeah, good, man. It's really good to see you. Now, I've got to have a word with you here because I said I would be the person that would be rocking the bald head, glasses, and beard look today. You were meant to choose something else.
Well, getting up there in age, you had to attend to, I had to go get something that actually bounces the light off and lets the eyes see easier. And it's a magnifying in there as well. So, rocking the bald head was already there. My hair was on the farewell tour. I want to say my last year playing with the Carolina Panthers. And I was one bad haircut away from shaving it all off. The beard was there prominently, but then it was like when I went to Carolina, I had already had my hair cut by, you know, when your hair is on the farewell tour, you always have a specific barber that you use because he knows just how to cut your hair perfectly. Just like when a woman goes to the hairdresser, she has that one hairdresser that does her hair right, and she hates when anybody else does her hair. Men, we have a barber. And then when you deter away from that barber, things like what happened to me in Charlotte, North Carolina happened. I went to a random barber. He cut my line, and my line was up here at first. He cut it back to about right here. And, I told this story recently on my vetted podcast, but I do the podcast with Reverend Fryer. And it was a seafood place, not a seafood place, but a soul food place right next to it. So you could order your food, and while you're getting your haircut, they'll be making your food and you get it. I got my food, and I was on my way back to, I had a condo in Charlotte. CVS just popped up out of nowhere. And I went in there and I picked up some razors and some shaving cream because at that point I didn't know how to shave my own head. And I just shaved it off. And it looked good. And then Steve Smith, he actually was already rocking the bald head. He said, you just have to find, you don't listen to everybody else. Find a way that suits you. Find it to shave your head that suits you and suits you best. Cause everybody's going to tell you, don't go against the grain. You don't get smooth if you don't go against the grain, baby. But that's why I'm rocking the bald head. And the beard just came up later on a dare.
Yeah, but you've got a beard guy now. I mean, you go to your own beard guy.
Well, you know, it was, I actually started growing it on the dare, and I started kind of liking it.
Do you think that growing a beard makes wearing your chin strap more comfortable in the NFL?
No, it doesn't. No, it actually doesn't do, it doesn't do anything. It's just hair that is there. For a hot second, we would put wristbands on that plastic thing, on the plastic part of the chin strap. Mm-hmm. We would put wristbands right there to cushion everything. So when you got hair down there, it makes it a whole lot better.
Well, you are in a very unique position, Hollis, because at the moment there's tons of guys that are getting projected into mock drafts. They're doing all the kind of visits. They've been to the combine. You didn't get any love. You went to a smaller school. You weren't on the SEC channel every single week. So no. You had to take matters into your own hands. You put together your own tape and you sent it out. And there's other guys that are doing it. They're hustling the same as you right now. What's the key for these guys get noticed by the NFL when they're coming from small schools?
Well, it's a lot different than when I was playing. When I was playing, I was projected to be like between a third and a sixth round pick. We did, even though I went to, our university wasn't like known for football. The closest thing that we had was LeSean Johnson got drafted in the third round. At that time, LeSean had got drafted in the third round, and Todd Pete was an offensive tackle who played in the NFL for quite some time. I got to meet him, and Those are a couple of other guys that later on I met, like once I got to the NFL. But at that time it was pagers. The technology has really ramped things up and made it a lot easier for guys to get noticed. Basically, if they're from a small school, you're going to send the tapes in. You're going to send not even tapes. Just going to send reels in now because you can email people things. So if you can find a scout and email him your reel. Get somebody to notice you because the one thing that I did was I had Brad Hoy of Northern Illinois. He was the audiovisual man at my college. He put all of the highlights that I had together. I watched him, and then I gave him a few songs to play, small excerpts from these songs. It was the first song was "I Ain't No Joke." The second one is "How Can I Move the Crowd," both by Eric B. and Rakim, and then the last one was by Craig Mack, "Can I Get Down?" And it wasn't too long, but it gave him just enough to be like, hey, I need to see more on this kid or on this kid to see if to give him a shot. And that's all you really need is that one shot. And the one thing you can't that I despise hearing is when people get that shot and then you get in a game and he's like, I need time to warm up. You don't get that time to warm up. You have to seize the second. I got to seize the second from Avery Johnson. Avery Johnson came to talk to us, and when I was playing with the Saints, I think it was right before we opened the dome, right before we reopened the dome. And one of his messages was seize the second. You're never gonna get this opportunity again. You have to seize the second. And a lot of guys, when they get that opportunity to get on the field, they don't seize that second, and then it's always gonna be what ifs in their mind. But I think the main thing though is to always be ready, and that's it. It's easier said than done, but it's like you have to always be ready. It's like you're not afforded when you're not drafted. You're not afforded the same mess ups as the guys who get drafted in the first and second round because that's who they're looking to build around. It's like, but if you show them something, then they'll start trusting you more. You have to build that trust. Let them know that you know what to do and when to do it.
Do you think Ray Rhodes, who's the coach that drafted you, do you think Ray Rhodes turned to his assistant and said, listen, I'm sick and tired of all these hillbillies sending us tapes of country and western music. Next kid that sends us some good rap tunes, he's going to get drafted.
Well, no, he just gave me an opportunity. I was an undrafted free agent. But the jacked up thing is, it was funny when you mentioned that part about the young guys coming up. The most jacked up thing that's going to probably transpire to a couple of guys is some teams are going to call and be like, hang loose, you're on our board. But they didn't draft, but they don't draft you. Mm-hmm. Hang loose, you're on our board. I got calls in the third, fourth, and fifth round. And then when the sixth and the seventh round came, when the teams who wanted me to come in as an undrafted free agent, they were inviting me to camp, they were letting me know that their draft was over. Would I be willing to come in to as an undrafted free agent to training camp and, to sign with them? And I put them on hold and I just waited. I talked to my parents and stuff. And then a key person who I don't give enough credit to is one of my old teammates. His name is Tim Lewis. The previous year, he only had to do this mainly because of his mother got sick. He had the opportunity to go from between the Chicago Bears. He played offensive tackle. He got between to go to the Chicago Bears or the Buffalo Bills. At the time, the Chicago Bears were rebuilding. I think they had drafted the running back Rashawn Salaam, rest his soul. But you got to remember that around that time, Buffalo was they were a playoff team. And he told me, he said, no matter what you do, you're going to be as being an undrafted free agent. He said to pick the team that's looking to build, not rebuild, but build depth, because they won't be looking for you to start right away, and then you'll get more of an opportunity there because they already got the people in place, so you'll get more of an opportunity there to show what you got than you would at a because when you got on a team like the Buffalo Bills, we practice against them. The people who got their spots, they really not practicing in training camp. They're just trying to get in shape. It's like when you go to a team that's looking for you to be that guy, and they put it this way: when you go, if you went to a team that's always picking in the top 10, as an undrafted free agent back then, you're really not going to make the team. So it's and the one thing where I pick that I would tell any of the young guys that are coming out of the draft this year is make sure the team wants you. You know, I figured out the Eagles wanted me. I talked to the owner, Jeff Lurie, on draft day on the second day of the draft. They went through all the rankings from the scouts, Dan Shanka, who had been scouting me since my sophomore year, all the way up to the next in the defensive line coach, Mike Turkovic, then at the time Emmett Thomas, the defensive coordinator, then Ray Rhodes, then turn around after I talked to Ray Rhodes, called back twice, then they put Jeff Lurie on the phone, and I was like, this seemed like a team that wanted me, and then Ray said all I had to do was come and show him what I did on that tape that I sent, and I would have no problem making a team.
We all know you as a cold-hearted quarterback killer, but when the clock ticked and the seventh round ended and your name wasn't called, was that devastating for you, or did you switch into, oh, that's 32 teams that's made a mistake, you're all going to find out?
You know what? What happened was at a certain point, you want to choose your own destiny. And as an undrafted free agent, you get to choose that. Now you're quote unquote the hot bitch. The teams are going to try to get you, entice you to come to their training camp because they also need camp bodies. But I wanted to go where I knew that I had a true fair opportunity. That's like, because if they draft the number one pick at your position, that you're going. That was the other thing that my boy Tim told me. He said they drafted the number one pick at your position. I think that year they had drafted Big Cat Williams for the Bears, and so Tim went there only because his mom was sick and he didn't want to be far away from home, as he's from the Chicago area. But I was fortunate enough to where my parents were healthy, and I was able to choose a team that I felt like wanted me.
The kind of counter to that is when you get these guys coming in. So just looking at the quarterbacks that are going to be coming in this year, but you've been in that position. You had such a long career. You saw guys coming in as the top draft picks for that team, that franchise.
Mm-hmm.
How intense is the pressure for them to deliver? And is there a lot of pressure from guys like you, the vets in the roster, that are looking at them thinking, oh, you were drafted top 10, you better be good?
Well, I think the pressure is, I think people put more pressure on themselves. I think if they just go about it like they were doing when they were drafted and picked, if they go off their talent and just kind of apply yourself, it's a job. It is a job now. It's like, but all the things that you're doing are to keep your body in shape. You can't do the crazy crap off the field like you used to. The coach is not coming to get your ass out of the vice like they would in college. None of that's going to happen. You're a grown up now. They're not going to tell you to work out. You're supposed to come to all the camps in shape and ready to go each and every time. I think the biggest thing is finding out that it's a business, and that it's a you get paid to play, and you just have to do it right. It's like it, and the one thing that the pressure is, if you don't, the pressure is going to be on, and it's going to be coming from upstairs because they drafted you high. We're trying to get you to play better. I was like, but I don't know. It's like, I think you just have to do the things that you did to get drafted. And if you go away from that, you have to watch film and be a student of the game. You can't, and then you have to be coachable. It's like, sometimes guys come in and I call them can't get rights. It's like, because the coach is only trying to put you in a position that they think that you'll be successful in. It's like, but the other part too, is when you see some of the coaches have a system, and I'm not going to say I don't like that style of coaching. When you have a system, this is like, when I was under Double J, if he had a player that needed to be on the field, we always had a system to get that player on the field, some type of personnel wise, he could switch the personnel up, and it would be some different calls that he made to get that person that can make plays on the field and have them shine when we need them to shine.
Well, here's a question. You didn't have to go through the same kind of testing process that that the players have to go through now is incredibly intensive. Are you glad you didn't do the scouting combine, or do you think you would have bossed the combine and you would have been raised higher up the draft boards?
Now, the funny thing about not doing the combine, I had to do a combine over and over and over again. Every time one of the scouts came to my school to run, to get my 40 time, to get my cone drill time, they didn't just take the word of whatever scout that previously came up there. And at that time, the pro days were not as prevalent as they are now. It's like at the time, the Huskies, we didn't have, it was very rare that somebody from our school was going to the NFL. And then everything started changing. It's kind of like, I equate it to this. Like we're about the same age, right?
You look 20 years younger, but yeah.
Well, it's like when you look at it, it's like, so growing up as a kid, I was at 12 years old, I wore size 12 shoe in the seventh grade. There was, at that time, there was not the kid style clothes. So I looked like a deacon going to school because I had on dress shoes, slacks, and a shirt with a sweater over it because I was a Husky kid. Mm-hmm. And then, wearing a size 12 shoe, I look like a damn clown in Stacey Adams each and every day. Try playing run across in Stacey Adams. Run across is like playing, it's tag.
Yeah.
There's no, you don't have any moves. Anytime you try to stop, you're gliding by the competition. but I equate it to, like, nowadays, you have your big kids' clothes that make them still feel like a kid, so they don't look out of place. Back then, it's like, you see how times have evolved and changed. It's kind of like, as technology has gotten a lot better too, because the way they do technology now, you have them covering high school games. I was like, my dad, I still got a tape, a VHS tape of my dad. My dad is probably the reason they put the shake proof recording action on the camcorders, because when he used to tape my high school games, he would be so into the game and his hand would be going up and down and be like, oh. So I think dad's everywhere. That's what they got that shake that it removed the shake in the camera. But it was pretty cool. It was like, you look at it now, it's like everything is almost done for you now with technology. So all you have to do now is go out and perform, and then you get your stuff and you put it, I'm gonna call it, on wax. Get your reel and put it on wax, and then send it to each team. You don't have to do what I did. Me and my agent recorded 30, at the time it was 30 teams. We recorded 30 VHS tapes to send them to the clubs. You remember how you used to have to do the double dance and then make sure you put the tape over the spot so it will record the other tape?
Yeah.
Take you back, huh?
Yeah. Well, there's 30 running backs in the NFL now cursing the amount of work that you and your agent put in, because you halved some of those players' careers, Hollis. Let's be perfectly honest. Answer me this question honestly, and I know you will, but you're talking about technology. Mm-hmm. If, when you were a player, they have those little tablets on the sideline that they look
right.
To, if you had those as a player, would you have found a way to abuse that and watch television or SpongeBob or adult movies?
Not adult movies. I would have watched SpongeBob, though. I would have found a way to watch SpongeBob or Tom and Jerry. But SpongeBob, definitely. It was around the time when he was really getting funny at that time. it was like the funniest part of that whole thing is those used to be there used to be pictures. Not even Polaroid pictures. They were the pictures that came through it was some type of machine that they always came through, and it was the first two steps of every play.
That was in the days when they had the big telephones as well, and you had to telephone upstairs.
Joe Montana figured out a way to call his call his girlfriend or his wife. But I was cracking it with the phone on the side through how you used the Morse code thing.
Yeah,
it's like apparently he figured out, because it was in his football life. He figured out a way to call his girlfriend or her wife at the time during the game. That was so funny.
Well, everybody knows the most important position of football is defensive tackle. And the second most important position is quarterback. And it looks like quarterbacks are dominating the 2024 NFL draft. Who is the guy out of the top quarterbacks that you think in 12 years' time he's still going to be in the NFL and he's going to be seen as the best pick from this draft?
So as far as quarterbacks, that's kind of that's a good question. I like Caleb Williams' style and stuff, but I don't like the crying that he did in his mom's lap. There's no football. There's no crying like that. Not like that. I can see you crying and tearing up because you lost, but I don't know because I don't know if he, I don't know how he's going to take the NFL or is he going to take the NFL by storm? I don't know. Because his dad wanted him to, have stake in the team, whatever team to draft him. I was like, you haven't done anything. So sometimes when you do things of that magnitude, you kind of stick your foot in your mouth. And I think the players are going to take, the players would take it personal, especially once playing against him. So it's like he had the whole big board and stuff at the combine. I don't think you should go to the combine if you're not going to work out. Somebody else who's going to work out should go get in that spot. If you're not going to work out, stay your ass at home. Nobody need to see you. I get I was totally pissed when I saw that. All he had was I guess he had his brackets up or some crap like that. And I'm like, come on, man. But as far as the quarterbacks, I like Jaden Daniels. I love Jaden Daniels' skill set. I love Mike Pence too. Penix, not Pence. Mike Pence is the old vice president. Michael Penix. I love his style too. Everybody's how the Drake May kid. I just don't see it. I feel like he's the second coming of Mitchell Trubisky. Let's see. It's another one. Everybody. Bo Nix.
Bo Nix.
Bo Nix. Yeah. I think Bo Nix is just old. He's older than Chris Winkie. I don't know if you remember Chris.
He was like 28 when he.
Yeah, like, come on. I was like, dear God, man. I didn't know he had it. Bo Nix has a twin brother he dwarfs his twin brother. But I think he's ready for the next level. Like about 10 or 12 years down the line, I'm thinking more of Jaden Daniels. Mm-hmm. And it was just because of the way he was at Arizona State. And then he came and he played a couple of years in LSU and he's just been on the rise like the whole time. It's great to see the way he does things. And somebody was just talking about his size. And I was like, he's got the ability. You could always put size on when you get in those weight rooms and stuff. And then all your food, it's a little bit different when you have a chef preparing quality meals for you, nutritious meals that, you know, not only give you fuel, but give you the right type of muscle. And I think between him and Caleb, one of those two guys are going to make it 12 years. It depends on how the first few years, pan out, because with Caleb's dad bumping his gums the way he is, I think he's going to turn off of some people. And as some of the brass too. Have you heard what he's been saying? I got a question for you. Okay. So if you were the Bears, what would you do with the first overall pick?
I think you have to go Caleb Williams, because if you don't pick him and he becomes a franchise all-pro quarterback, then they've never had a franchise quarterback. You have to go back to like Sid Luckman, and this is their first opportunity. They have to get this.
Sid Luckman, who the hell is that?
Exactly.
You didn't like Jim McMahon?
Jimmy Mack wasn't franchise though, but it's such an important decision for them to make. They can't get it wrong. We don't have the access to all the conversations they have. We don't get to see them sit down and dissect defenses when they're watching tape and stuff, so they know.
Yeah.
Here's another question for you. You were with the Eagles when the Eagles drafted quarterback number 2 overall to be the franchise quarterback, Donovan McNabb. It was Tim Couch went before him. Akeelee Smith was in that draft. Dante Culpepper was in that draft.
Right.
There was a lot of players they could choose from. There was also controversy because they wanted the running back, Ricky Williams. When Donovan stepped in the building as a vet, you were watching, I know everybody was watching him, but as a vet, did you think, yeah, that this guy, he's handling his business right, this guy's good, he's got it? Or does it take a long time for a player to work out if this guy's actually going to be the face of the franchise?
Well, it takes a few practices to see, you know, whatever. Because the one thing is the speed of the NFL game is way faster than a college game. And I like college football like the next person, but when you play in college, you got some bums that you're gonna encounter sometime. When you're in the NFL, everybody's good. And when everybody's good and everybody's on the same page, put it this way. That's why they say on any given Sunday, anybody can get their ass quick kicked. Do you know why? Because at some point, the people that you're playing against, they were the best of the best in college. And they got to this level. And all you have to do, what I found is all you have to do is awaken the beast. And when I say that, my rookie year, the then 1-14 New York Jets, all we had to do was beat the 1-14 New York Jets. You hear what I say? 1-14 with Hugh Douglas on their team. 1-14. Ty Detmer goes on TV and says, hell, if we can't beat the Jets, then we need to be at home anyway. They gave us all we wanted. We ended up winning the game in the fourth quarter off of two. Michael Zordish, his old name is my buddy, Michael Zordish Z, off of two picks from him and a Charlie Garner screenplay for a touchdown. But I think Hugh Douglas had, and then that's when they want to start Jermaine Mayberry, his first started offensive tackle. Hugh Douglas had 3.5 sacks. I was like, but I'm saying all that to say that the when you get on the NFL, that's what they say any given Sunday, because sometimes you go out there and you think, when you're in college, you can pretty much roll your helmet out when you're like one of the big dogs, because you have wave after wave after wave after wave of players, of good players coming in. In NFL, you only go too deep. And most of the time, like Marv Levy said, depth is great on paper until you have to use it in the game. It's like you're behind somebody because you get it right some of the time, they get it right most of the time. So it's when you see somebody who comes into the league, that's the one thing I think they have to cope with, that the fact that the talent level is way higher. But when Donovan first came in to answer your question, I was like, he's a goofy. He's goofy, which was cool because he's still young. I just felt like he was goofy. And you heard Asante Samuel say this. I didn't, when he first said it, I started thinking back to it. He said that if they had a corrected Donovan when he was throwing passes into the dirt in practice, then he would have been a lot better. If they didn't treat him like they had kid gloves. That's the one thing, he got coddled. And it was an interview that Michael Vick did, that he said the worst thing that happened to him is when they fired Dan Reeves, because Dan Reeves held him accountable. You got to have a coach that held him accountable. And that's, I think, that was the best thing to happen to Donovan, was having a coach that held him accountable initially, because Rod Dauhauer and Brad Childress was on the offense, and they held him accountable initially. But as those coaches like left the squad and stuff, you know, they started to coddle him and coddle him and coddle him and coddle him. And that's pretty much why I don't think we got over the top, because there was a couple of situations. Put it this way. If you're so damn good, how can you lose to Brett Favre 6-3? And that we weren't playing softball in Lambeau Field.
In this draft class, you could argue maybe the second most deep or populous position group of wide receiver. Only three wide receivers have ever been selected number one overall in the NFL. Did you know that?
Damn ball.
I don't think any of the three receivers that were selected number one overall were any good.
You don't think? Really?
No. Definitely not. Especially not the guy that was drafted in 1984.
You know he's in the top 15 in catches and receptions and stuff, right?
Yeah. And he's not even in the Hall of Fame conversation.
Yeah, you know the funny part is they let Zach Thomas and Jason Taylor. It's like, Jason Taylor's got over 100 sacks. I was like, yes, so? If you're a one-trick pony, you get the hell out of here, man. You know what? It's becoming, that's why as much as I don't really like Deion Sanders, he said the funniest thing known to man when he said that they need to move my bus to a different room because this is becoming the Hall of Very Good. it shouldn't be about politics or nothing. It should be the Hall of Fame should be if you are eligible when you first or if when you become eligible, if you truly Hall of Famer, you should go in. It shouldn't be all this politicking and all this extracurricular crap. Oh, he's not going to get in on the first ballot. Oh, is he a first ballot? Will they let him in? Will they make him wait? Nobody gives a damn. The hell out of here. And if truth be known, it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's not the NFL Hall of Fame.
You noticed that, didn't you? That's a good point. Well, out of those receivers that are coming out, you've got Malik Nabors, you've got Harrison Jr., you've got Roma Dunze. Which of those guys...
Brian Thomas Jr.?
Brian Thomas Jr. at LSU, yeah. Which of those guys are worthy? The guys you're screaming for to get selected?
A.D. Mitchell? what'd you say? What do you mean?
Which one of those guys is the guy that you're screaming for to get drafted?
Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah.
I think because he stretches the field, he's got speed, hands. Man, I like the real fast worthy kid, yep. But I like Brian Thomas Jr. A little bit more. I think he's a full package at wide receiver. Now Marvin Harrison Jr., he's actually the best player in the draft if you look at it. But if the Bears had kept Justin Fields as the Bears, I would have drafted Marvin Harrison Jr. first, and then drafted an offensive tackle with that other pick. But now you have to draft Caleb Williams and then draft an offensive tackle to protect him. The one thing I think they did was they went and got Keenan Allen too, so that ought to help out a lot because he's just a beast all around.
They think this draft is not going to be very top heavy for defense. Could be 10, 12 picks before the first defensive players.
Mostly corners though. Mostly corners is like the. It's like no big dog like up front. It's like I think the one Byron Murphy out of Texas. I think he may go high, but it's no real. And the kid Harrison? I can't think. He's the linebacker. He's injury prone though. The linebacker at NC State.
Yeah,
but also Adrian Cooper, and then of course Jeremiah Trotter Jr. All those guys I think are going to be in the second round. So it's like. Because I think a lot of people need offensive weapons right now and offensive line help. Because there's no defensive lineman that just dominated. Like usually you have somebody who puts themselves on the map, by kicking ass. There's a couple of cats that they put in the Ed Oliver type thing. I was like, but that's still a one gapper. Sometimes you need somebody. Sometimes you're not gonna be able to be a one gapper. You're gonna have to kick some ass and take some names. that's what we call the two gapper. Got to put your hands on them and beat them. Who else? I'm trying to think who else in this draft because it's not real. It's a lot of wide receivers though. If you look at it, if you looked at the wide receivers, it's a lot of wide receivers, and nobody's really talking about the young running backs that are coming out either. Got a quick question for you. What did you think about the Saquon Barkley? Pick up.
Well, one of the guys in our podcast, Jamie, you met him in Edinburgh. He hosted the show in Edinburgh, and he's a Giants fan, and he's traumatized. He's upset.
He should be. He should be. The owner of the Giants said he was sick when Saquon Barkley signed with the Eagles.
I was like, well, this is okay. I mean, I liked Swift. I liked Trey Benson in the draft. I would have been happy if the Eagles took Trey Benson.
That's what I was going to say. I like him a lot. But the one thing I think that I put this into your head when you're thinking of the Eagles. Now, I just think you got A.J. Brown out there. You got Slim Reaper out there. Then you look back over here. And you got Dallas Goedert right there. And then you look in the backfield. You have Saquon Barkley. Now, he's one of those running backs you need eight in the box to stop him. And not only that, I've omitted the biggest part of this whole equation is that offensive line up front, those mammoths. Just think now that he's got a quarterback. He's got weapons all around him. And he's not the first option. They're not keying totally in on him. But if he gets going, then they have to key in on him. Just think of that. And then also think of when we get Max Blitz this time, who could pick up a block and is not going to get what I like to call Doug ran over by a linebacker, which we were in a catch 22 a lot of times. Even though guys knew where to pick up the blitzes, they were getting ran through, and it was looking pretty bad. But I think it was a quality pickup, and it puts other teams on notice, and it gives our offense not only an added weapon, but a bit of an added advantage, because now you have to pick who you're going to double team as far as out in the secondary. You can't just double team them both and think that things are going to be sweet.
When you came out and you've made your way into the kind of starting lineup, was it a huge kind of shock for you, just the level of physicality compared to college? It was harder for you to bully players. Is that something that, do some players struggle with the ego concept of you don't win every game? You're not the guy that wins every high school game and every college game. You're in the pros now. You might lose a lot of games. You might not bowl over the person in front of you in every single play. You might get put in your backside a couple of times. Does the ego kind of thing, the ego check, do you think it affects players?
It may affect some players, but the one thing that my first action, it was kind of a shock because it was the very first game of the season. It was like in the first series, we playing again at RFK Stadium versus the then Washington Redskins with who was the quarterback? I want to say Gus Frerotte. Then they had Terry Allen was the running back, and they also had my buddy Brian Mitchell, who But my very first play of the game, we had them backed up, and I made a tackle for a TFL on the very first play of my very first NFL play, Terry Allen in the backfield. But I was on Trey Junkin? Mm-hmm. Remember the guard, Trey?
Yeah.
I slipped him on a spike stunt and flew right in the backfield and made the play. I was like, but when I first got in there, my eyes were giant, were really wide open, and and my buddy William Fuller, he grabbed my forearm and say, "Calm down, big fella, just do what you do in practice." I was like, okay. So then, once I got that first play, and I got the second play and the third play, I was good for the rest of the game. But then my very first start was it was sweet. It was it was after we beat the Redskins at home. I played about 45 or 50 plays. The most plays I had played, it was like I was playing with all the starters. But because it was the 10th game of the season, I started down in Arizona. We were at Sun Devil Stadium at Arizona State. It was pretty sweet. We ended up losing the game, but it was like the one thing I think that a lot of guys are going to have to come to grips with and learn is after the game, your entire body hurts. You're going to have to you're going to have to learn the ways of treating yourself. That means the chiropractor. That means must getting massages. That means the cold tub and the hot tub and using the steam and the sauna to help relax and relax your body and get back to form each and every week. I think that's the one thing. And then getting on a good vitamin regimen and eating right, because everybody runs into their rookie wall. I think if that's what you're looking for, the rookie wall is real. It's like when you first learn how to ride a bike, and you don't know how to turn yet, and there's a wall coming up or a tree. That's how you hit the rookie wall. It's good. That's why it's great to have veterans on the team, because they took me to GNC. I got a multivitamin, and I got some stuff for energy, and vitamin C and vitamin B, and it was like you had to replenish those things because you expel a lot. Mm. And that will be the one thing that I would tell them is like we was talking about earlier, the everything is more upgraded. Technology and everything is shown, and they using, I hate when they use analytics though, but technology has got it to the point where those things are readily available. But just like you said, the ego check. As kids, and I don't know if this may bring back some memories of your own, But as youngsters, you felt at a certain point in your life, did you feel invincible? Like, could nobody stop? Yeah. So as a football player, that's how you feel. You feel bulletproof. But then, as you said, there's some kryptonite somewhere. Because Mr. Kimbrough said, if you think you're bad, there's always somebody badder. And the part about losing, sometimes losing, my boy Hugh Douglas would always be like, it ain't the record, and it's not going to be the last time it happens. You have to have that mindset. You have to have a short memory, especially when you're playing defense, cornerback, or anything. You're going to lose some. It's like, just don't lose the most. It's a bunch of small battles out there that in the end, there's going to be some battles. You just want to win the war. You just want to win more battles so that you end up winning the war. And the war, you know how you won the wars is a scoreboard, is evident of the scoreboard. So you, a lot of the young guys nowadays, they're out for the vanity of things. Then everybody's always posting with their workout and stuff. I posted 3 or 4 workouts in the entire time I've been retired. But I work out all the time.
You post a picture every day.
I post a picture every day, but not my workout.
Yeah.
See, you're supposed to be working out. How do you have time to record?
Well, Hollis, you've been generous with your time as always. I've got one last question for you. I know you've got a lot of ladies that are probably blowing up your phone right now, and you've got to get down to business. But was there any moments where a rookie came in and it was just a, what are you doing, rookie? Like, he puts his shoulder pads on backwards, or he walks into the wrong meeting, or was there anything that just, it was just a rookie moment for the poor guy?
A rookie moment, let's see. It's been a couple of times where rookies didn't know any better. Like, it was one time in the when cell phones became prevalent, more prevalent. One rookie had his in the meeting, and it rang out loud. The first thing everybody said was like, rookie, because that is a large fine. if you can't turn your phone on silent, or you don't turn your phone on silent, you're supposed to leave it in the locker. Whoever calls you, they should know better. But that's the one thing. And then it's something, every once in a while you get that rookie who doesn't think that they have to do the, there's certain things that they call, we don't do the hazing anymore. They don't touch anybody or beat anybody up, but you have to do the rookie. There's a rookie dinner that you have to take the guys in your position out to dinner. And you're always supposed to get breakfast at least once or twice a week, even though every facility has great training table with a tremendous breakfast made. No. We want you to stop at our favorite place and get us our breakfast at least once or twice. And on every flight, the rookie is in charge of bringing whatever meal that their position desires. Most of the time, it's chicken from Popeyes or KFC. Now, if you don't abide by these simple rules, there'll be things that will, randomly come up missing. Your car, you won't be able to find your car keys. Or, the playbook is worth $10,000, right? Yeah, I say it's worth $10,000 because if you lose it, it's a $10,000 fine. So things like that will come up, randomly come up missing. You may come and you're like, man, this smells like icy hot in here. And they've lathered all of your stuff, all of your equipment and stuff with icy hot just to teach you a lesson to show you that you will conform, or things of this nature will keep happening. Or it's playful banter. But, everybody pays their dues and stuff, so to speak. And it's only every once in a while you get that one guy who wants to buck the system and change everything.
The NFL draft doesn't work. It's a ridiculous concept. You're the reason why Michael Vick was drafted number one overall. You weren't drafted at all, and you destroyed him with the NFC Championship game. It's not where you start, it's where you finish, Hollis.
Yes, it is. And that's the one thing, too. I appreciate that. It's the one thing that it's funny you say that. That's the one thing you have to embed in these kids. It ain't where you start, it is where you finish. And also how you finish. It's like, because you can, if you go into it and you get there, don't screw up the opportunity, because you'll be kicking yourself later on. and don't not take the opportunity. Sometimes with people like, I could have did this, I could have did that. Well, why did you? Why are we being nostalgic over something you could have did? You should, and you all, because you're only going to be that age one time. And football is a sport that you can't retire and then unretire unless you're fairly young. Mm. So once you get to a certain age, you got to let that one go.
Yeah. Well, Hollis, you've been an absolute legend as always. Thank you very much for giving us your time. Eagles are playing opening weekend, Friday night.
In Brazil.
Yes. Hollis has promised to wear a thong on the beach.
No.
Check into his Instagram.
I know my role. I know my place. I don't. Nobody. I'm not looking to make everybody sick on the beach. I'm, you know.
All right, man. Well, Hollis, thank you very much for speaking to us.
No problem, babe.